Chapter 18, Forest, 1937. As Mary Triplett and her husband pulled away from the Preventorium and made the long drive back home to Forest, Mississippi, she could only wonder what would happen to her son, Donald. The daughter of a prominent businessman, Mary had always striven to excel. In college, a rarity for women at the time, she was named business manager for the yearbook and elected president of her senior class. She knew that raising a child would be difficult, but her son Donald presented a unique set of challenges, his personality and behaviors unlike anything else she, or anyone else she spoke to, had seen. In Jackson, Mississippi, about 50 miles away, Mary's name frequently appeared in the Clarion Ledger, the largest newspaper in town. Whether presiding over an event for the Girls' Reserve or chairing the Women's Auxiliary Group, she was a constant fixture in the Mississippi area. A June edition of the paper mentioned her retirement as president from the Belhaven College alumni, a change, no doubt, related to her increasing exasperation with Donald's behavior. A frequent contributor to the Ledger was Royal Copeland, M.D., a United States senator and former Commissioner of Health of New York City. His medical column might discuss improvements in tuberculosis care or the dangers of taking too long of a sun bath. At that time, his most frequent admonitions involved diphtheria, imploring mothers to have their children protected from the bacterial infection despite the dangers of serum sickness. In February of 1933, just as Mary had become pregnant with Donald, Dr. Copeland made a special announcement in his column. In February of 1933, just as Mary had become pregnant with Donald, Dr. Copeland made a special announcement in his column. A new shot for diphtheria had been made available, an injection far more powerful and effective than previous iterations. Although he said it would require only two shots, many doctors would still insist on three. Physicians and parents had no idea of its significance, but injected aluminum had arrived in Mississippi. With diphtheria campaigns in full swing, children across the state would be getting several doses. Pictures of Donald as an infant show him looking directly at the camera, even sometimes smiling. As he got closer to 2 years old, photographs indicate something had changed, less smiling, less wanting to be held. He became detached, unable to connect with family, playmates, or even some of the toys he might hold in his hand. His mother had to continue feeding him long after his peers had begun to use spoons by themselves. His ability to communicate had seemingly disappeared, but in its place were signs of musical ability and an incredible memory. He could recall and sing Christmas carols perfectly, had no problem memorizing the 25 questions of the Presbyterian Catechism, but would throw tantrums if he detected the slightest change to his daily schedule. Mary could find no one that had ever seen a child like Donald. She and her husband had even taken him to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, no small feat in 1930s America, to attempt a diagnosis, a trip that ended in failure. Feeling lost and with Donald's problems getting more severe by the day, Mary and her husband had made the agonizing decision to place Donald in a facility. Although she had devoted her every waking hour to his support, there, she hoped they might be able to unlock the mysteries of whatever had driven him deep within his impenetrable shell, a possibility that filled her with anxiety, as it might confirm suspicions that she, and not Donald, was actually the source of the problem. Back in Forest, Mary and her husband were able to expand their family. Another child was born, a son who appeared to be in perfect health. His warmth and interest in Mary only served to remind her how detached her firstborn had been. Regardless, her concerns never strayed from Donald, wondering, hoping that there might be someone who could explain to her what had happened to him. As they neared the year anniversary of Donald's departure, Mary was able to get in touch with a famous child psychiatrist in Baltimore, Maryland, a doctor that by complete chance had seen a child similar to the way she described Donald just 2 years earlier.